Hey, this is John Bokenkamp. Welcome to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
The boss man is in the house. Welcome to a special edition of The Blacklist Exposed. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. And I know we told you guys we were done until April 15th, but much like Red Reddington, it's all in how I said it. Show notes and their intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com. But we are here to talk to Mr. John Bokenkamp, creator and every other title you can think of for The Blacklist.
Yeah, at this point, I think it's in his will or something, right? He owns the show. He's in trust because he's got not only this show, but he's got that Blacklist Redemption show going on now, too.
What? What is that one about? I think we talked about that a little bit, didn't we?
We talked about it then, and we talked about it a little bit in this episode as well. You'll hear exactly from John how the spinoff kind of took shape. We'll find out how the spinoff played in on the first episode last week when we talked about it, what his thoughts were, what he thought of our thoughts, very complimentary of the podcast. So that's a fun conversation. And we have a whole bunch of really great details about what's coming up in Chicago on April 22nd, where John will actually be here talking with us and all of you at C2E2. So make sure you get your tickets over at C2E2.com.
Yes, don't miss that. That's going to be a lot of fun. And as you will hear from the interview, he's a great guy to talk to and loves to talk to the fans, loves to talk about fandom and everything that's going on with the show. So Redemption especially is on everybody's lips right now because of, you know, the show is actually airing and Blacklist is kind of on... It's not really a hiatus. It's more like a break while Redemption plays out, right?
Yeah, it's on vacation. It's floating on a boat and going around Hawaii.
It's on vacation. There you go. So it's basically the first half of this interview is going to be Redemption, and like Troy just said, and then the second half is going to be Blacklist. So we cover both shows in the interview, and he's very open, very honest, and masterfully evasive, I do want to say. He's good at it. This guy's learned. He knows how to play. He is better than Red, I think, at some of these questions. Let's just get into the interview. I know you guys want to hear from John Bokenkamp himself, creator, showrunner, the guy, the man of The Blacklist.
Well, everybody, we got a special episode for you here. John Bokenkamp is in the house. Thank you so much, John, for stopping by. We tried to do this a little bit earlier, but you had some crazy crap going on. You decided to do two shows in the same season. You must be insane.
Well, I was insane before we had the opportunity to do two shows. That has nothing to do with the shows, but it has been, yes, it has been a lot, but it's been fun. It's been a real wild sort of ride of trying to come up with a new world, a new universe, new characters and all of that. And, you know, I'm well aware of the fact that I'm super lucky to be able to do it. So it's been great.
I want to ask a question in terms of how Redemption came to be, because now we're into it. So obviously the how and the whys and everything else are behind us. You're on to the what's next. But what is the process of actually developing a spinoff? I think everybody that's a TV fan or that's a fan of any show that has seen a series spinoff into something, how does that even come on your plate?
The biggest thing to me was to make it not smell like business, you know, like so many spinoffs, and I should be so lucky as to be part of spinoffs that are like this, but you know, so many spinoffs are sort of the same show resituated in either a different city, sort of a duplicate. You know, there could have easily, probably not, but there could have easily been an attempt to tell the story of Schmed Schmeddington, who turns himself into MI6 and wants the Red Reddington deal. You know what I mean? And we have another story that takes place overseas about another unit that does sort of this same thing. And that to me felt a little not interesting. And we just wanted to tell a story that was part of the Blacklist universe. Some of the characters, it could have been, you know, I mean, you could pick any of the characters that could have kind of gone off in their own way. And we talked about different ones. Tom just felt like the more organic choice because of the skill set that he has. And it felt like an opportunity to tell a story that was a little more Alias, Mission Impossible fun than what The Blacklist is. So it was an opportunity to do another show and to try to not take away from The Blacklist and to try to not, we would be silly to try to duplicate it. I think, you know, there's such a unique sort of mixture of talents and luck and cast, and to try to do the exact same thing just felt like it would be a bad idea. And so we tried to do the version that's kind of, you know, what the way they used to do spinoffs, where like the Jeffersons were neighbors of Archie Bunker, but then would go off and move on up, and that would be a show, or Maude, or, you know, a lot of these other older shows. And that's what we tried, and I'm really proud of it.
Did any of the cast, I assume they're all fairly close, they seem close in photos and whatnot, were any of them like, can we go to Tom's show? Can we go hang out at Tom's show?
Everyone was super supportive about it. I mean, there were questions about it, like, so what's going on? So there's a different show. How is that going to work? Are there crossovers? Do we need to be on that show or not? But it was all, everyone in New York, the cast, the production crew, and everyone is very professional. We had our DP, for example, went over to the spinoff. We had an editor who was an assistant editor on the other show on Blacklist, who then moved to an editor position on Redemption. So it's kind of interesting to kind of, people came back, you know, it's like a weird family reunion kind of. New people that we didn't know, but also people who we had worked with before. John Chulesky is the guy who runs things in New York for us, and he has directed some of my favorite Blacklist episodes, so he's running it there. And it was a very organic process, and the cast and crew were all super supportive.
Well, that's good that John's over there, because I think that's the only last name that Aaron's able to pronounce on the show.
Yeah, that's funny.
We like anybody named John. There's a lot of Johns in the Blacklist universe, so he felt like he was an easy choice.
What was it let you pick Solomon, Nez Rowan, this particular cast of characters? Because the comedic timing between Ryan and Eddie is just so spot on, especially in this first episode we saw this past Thursday.
Yeah.
Was it just magic? Was it screen testing? Because when I talked to you, I think it was, gosh, March of last year, when you said you had 23 for season 3, and it was kind of be this backdoor pilot thing, and now it's a year later. Mm-hmm. How does Eddie come into that conversation of, hey, do you want to be on this new show?
Well, Eddie was just somebody that we loved from the Blacklist. He was somebody that came in at season 3 and just had a great energy, had a great sort of spark, and he came on screen and you wanted to watch him, you know. So when we thought about how do we want to do this, it felt like it was a bit of a buy. Obviously the guy went in and tried to shoot up Tom's wedding and basically murder him, but at the same time that sort of felt like, well, maybe that's the perfect reason why they should be bosom buddies working on the same task force, you know. So Eddie was just, I just love him as an actor. Fomka, John and I had met with early in season 3 and sat down with her. She came here to Paramount and we had coffee and just talked about the show, and that she, you know, could we convince her to be on it, and would she be interested? And it wouldn't be, she was like, well, I don't really want to do like a one episode thing, maybe an arc. And we couldn't figure anything out. And then when we realized that we were going to do a spinoff, we thought, well, maybe that's a way to weave her into the show. And so that's how she came on board. Tawny Cypress, who plays Nez, that was just a new character that we developed for the spinoff episode, and thought that she's somebody that, you know, we looked at a lot of actresses and we thought she was great. And then Adrian Martinez is a guy who I saw in The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, and I just remember watching that one night. My family was gone and I was sitting there eating pizza watching a movie, and he came on and I was like, that guy's awesome. I have a little email folder of a draft of an email that sits in my inbox where every once in a while I'll see a movie or I'm watching something and I'll just find an actor who just jumps out, and I kind of put their name down in a list like, oh, maybe at some point we could cast them. So when we were looking for somebody, I was like, oh, right, that guy. I wonder if he's around. We'd be lucky to get him. And then Adrian's just a weird, funny presence. And so, yeah, a different, you know, similar yet unique sort of team dynamic to the show.
So I'm curious about that movie, Walter Mitty. It's one of my personal favorites. Did it touch you in any way? Was it old media? Was there something that stuck out to you for that particular movie, especially since you got to watch it in isolation from the family?
You know, it was just something that was very weird. I thought it was a good, weird, I liked the strangeness of it. But I honestly, really all I remember is Adrian Martinez like holding a potted plant in an elevator. It wasn't like the movie that like, you know, changed my life. But yeah, I thought it was fun. But him holding the plant was memorable.
Okay, I got to ask you a question, because obviously, you know, we're talking to you. Redemption's kind of hit the ground, and you've got seven. By the time people listen to this, you have six more episodes to go. So you've Mm-hmm. You've got a little bit more time to tell a story. And I'm kind of curious because Troy and I had this discussion on the podcast that for the pilot, and this is just also it's our initial take to the show because we had seen a kind of a different dynamic in the backdoor pilot. It felt like Scotty and Tom were very stoic in terms of they were very, Scotty's going through an emotional crisis, so she's very kind of grounded and firm. And Tom doesn't really lighten up at all. And throughout the episode, I mean, to me, that character really has a lot of fun in the Blacklist he has. And I'm kind of curious, is that something that's going to evolve so we see more of the humor, the typical Tomisms, and we get in a little bit more of the Scotty that we saw last year?
You thought they were, did you say stoic?
Yeah, because I felt like, and I'm trying to word it the right way because I don't want it to make it sound negative. I don't mean it negative. I just meant like she didn't get a lot to do in that episode. Like it was setting up for what's going to come next. And Tom plays things a lot very straight, including that really ew moment on the dance floor.
That's just, by the way, that stuff is just weird to me. It's just uncomfortable and weird. And that's like, well, why not? She doesn't know. And she's a beautiful woman who hears this young guy. So whatever, the network's kind of like, what are you doing? And I read some review, I think it was Variety, was like, ugh, gross. And I'm like, well, it's not like some weird sexual fascination. It's just like, well, that's a weird storytelling perspective that we can kind of take there. But no, I get what you're saying. Like, I think the truth is it's trying to accomplish a lot of things. It's a character that we know, and maybe too many things, It's a character that we know who has a history. As we're sitting down to write it, the obstacles are this. Tom Keene is a character who knows who his mother is. He has worked for her. He knows that his father is dead. He knows that he disappeared as a child and that somebody confessed to murdering him but lied about it for money. And on one hand, we're trying to remain faithful to that for anybody who's watched The Blacklist, so it tracks. But at the same time, we're trying to write a story that if you've never seen The Blacklist, you can come into it and understand it. So, and on top of that, he's a character who's faced with come to New York. It's about your father, and he shows up there, and then he's sort of in this spycraft kind of world, which felt very serious. It felt very like we were trying to play the high stakes of it. So maybe maybe what we were playing as high stakes and danger came off a little too stoic or sort of serious. I think the next episode, which I think will have aired before this is released, is telling of what the show can be. It's a little more emotional. It's a little more simple. It's a bit more of just a case of the week. But yes, I understand that. That first episode, it was very difficult trying to write a pilot, that we wouldn't know when it would air. I mean, when we started doing this, it was like, great, start writing the pilot. Well, when will it air? Well, we don't know yet. Well, okay, is Tom going to be in 10 episodes of The Blacklist or 15 or 2? Well, we're not sure, but good luck. So you're trying to figure out, well, we don't want to betray anything on The Blacklist. That's what comes first. And so we have to find a natural way for him to leave and trying to juggle a lot of things. Not that that makes for any excuses for anything that wasn't clear. That was the unique challenge in this exercise.
Yeah. And I think what you guys had to work with, given that knowledge, played off very well, right? If you're a Blacklist fan watching the two-parter, it was a nice seamless transition from one to the other because we all thought there'd be more of a send-off in the Blacklist portion of it.
Right.
We were actually really excited there wasn't a send-off and that the send-off actually happened as part of that first 5 minutes of Redemption. At the same time, it kind of puts you guys in a tight spot because here, if you want new people to come in and watch the show that have never seen The Blacklist before, it almost felt like it didn't give you guys the opportunity to set up the characters in such a way that new audience could be pulled in from the get-go. So you almost have to do that in that second episode that's coming up.
Well, that's why I felt like if you look even at the structure of the Blacklist pilot and this pilot, there are similarities that are quite purposeful, but that are, you almost flip Tom and Liz. Liz is a woman who has a job. She works for the FBI. It's a normal day. It's crazy. And Tom's sort of at home, maybe thinking about a job. And then a call comes about his father. and here's this journey that he has to go off on. And she sort of anoints it. They're almost like flipped in their relationship, you know. And the Blacklist spinoff, he had the job. He was a teacher. He was normal. She had this crazy thing that happened to her. And he was like, great, go do your thing. And so we were trying to make, we were trying to put all the firsts that happened to the characters in the pilot and not have those firsts happen. For example, it would be very confusing, I think, for anybody watching the spinoff if Tom Keen got a call from his father's attorney in the end of episode 15 of The Blacklist saying, you need to come to New York. It's about your father. And then, you know, somebody turns on the show and says, great, I'm going to watch Redemption. And here's a guy showing up in New York and we don't know why. You know what I mean? It's just, there are a number of sort of time slots and the order of things and all of that that we're trying to keep in order. Even in talking about it, it sounds confusing. So we're trying to do a number of things. And that pilot had a lot of things it needed to accomplish. And I think it did. You know, I think it set, if anything, it set the tone and introduced the characters. And now when the episode's going forward, can play out.
Does Ryan just want to nap at this point?
Well, I think Ryan, who I love, is kind of going, wow, Megan Boone has been working her ass off for the past 4 years. You know, Ryan's been the guy who has showed up and, you know, he's in three scenes and works a day or two, you know, has a big presence in the show. And Megan's the one who's there saying, the blacksmith is a man known for his crimes from Germany to the skin, you know, and like doing all this dialogue in these big scenes. And she's in almost every scene. So I think he has a newfound respect, I think, for the amount of work that she's been doing. But yeah, he's been a super trooper, and he's been doing at times, you know, the schedule is very difficult. They've been doing, you know, there's a time where he's doing both shows, you know, trying to get that scene where Ryan and Megan are together in the opening. We didn't shoot that until a couple of weeks ago because we couldn't get them together because they were shooting two different shows. So it made it a little bit of a challenge.
That's honestly my favorite scene of those two this entire season is in Redemption. I just felt like that. This is the first time I've seen them in the whole season where it felt like it's not a bunch of dealing with Red's aftermath or, you know, a reckoning of any kind. It's just a regular couple dealing with working life.
Maybe a little more relatable. But that's one of the hard things, you know, that's one of the pitfalls, and not to make excuses for it, but a character like Liz, who's gone through so much, big stakes there. And so it's hard to find those moments where, hey, sweetie, should we, you know, get Mushu chicken tonight or should we get pizza? And yeah, well, I don't know. What movie do you want? It's hard to have that lightness when you've just saved the little girl from falling off the bridge. Everything becomes rather heavy. So yeah, I'm glad that worked for you.
It was great. I mean, the baby Agnes doing the little over her mouth when the camera cut to that, I was like, oh my God, that's so cute.
Right. That was a great little moment. Yeah. Very cute.
Kudos.
You know what? I have one question. It has to do with the transition. And this is a personal experience of mine. So when you had the block, you had the 2-hour block, we already talked about, we had the expectations. We thought there was going to be an Olympic baton handing off. And it really wasn't like that at all, which I loved. But I also realized, I think after the fact, because I rewatched Redemption on Hulu because it's on Hulu and it felt Redemption is. Yeah. Blacklist isn't, but Redemption is. And so I threw it. I'm like, you know what? I watched it and the tonal shift was really kind of a little bit jarring when I watched it block to block. But when I watched it again on Hulu, I enjoyed it more, I think, because I didn't have the Blacklist leftover, you know, that oh my God, it's Dembe and everything else that came with that. I didn't have that leftover in me.
Well, I think that's also one of the reasons why NBC, and I think wisely so, aired, and I don't know if it helped, and it probably wasn't on, or maybe it was, when you watched the Hulu version, was there the sort of promo trailer of things to come?
That was sandwiched
in between the two episodes. You know, we ended the Blacklist, Dembe walks off into the subway, and then it was this season on Redemption or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there was sort of a trailer, a movie trailer of the show, of what it promises, and then we started the show. And that, I think, was smart of NBC to do, to sort of say, here's a little taste of what you're going to see. But yeah, that shift, that gear shift there that you're talking about, the tonal shift there, I don't know. I guess that's just that had to happen at some point, I feel like. And you know, I mean, it's a bummer that it felt like a little bit of a bump, but at the same time, you know, if it was the same thing, I would worry that that would be even a bigger bump, because it's like, wow, we're kind of in the exact same universe, and it's just not gonna yeah. be the same thing, you know? So why not signal to the audience right up front, put on your chin straps.
We have The Blacklist. It's been very much a crime, drama, spy thriller kind of thing, but this seems more on the up and up, kind of newer. We have Dumont with all of his toys. What was it about the technology that you guys said, hey, we need to have this like high tech stuff in this show?
I think, you know, look, this is something I've heard you guys talk about as an Alias fan. You know, when John Eisengrath was like, hey, maybe Red's code is Nick's Pizza. You know, I'm like, I don't know what Nick's Pizza is. I'm like, okay, cool, fine. And then I find out that's an Easter egg from Alias. I was like, oh, okay, cool. He is somebody who has a great, John has a great sense of humor, is good at the fun, big, whimsical things. He's good at the stuff that I call, I don't know if he thinks this is an insult or not, but some of the more soapy elements of the show, the more character-driven stuff, the relationships, he's very good at that. I'm far too serious, and I fancy myself as grounded, and I'm the guy who writes, you know, the drugged woman with a bell tied to her finger lying in bed, and in a weird, creepy way. And I think this was an opportunity for us to take a step back and embrace some of the stuff that worked, that John has is just very good at, you know, from working on Alias. And those gadgets are something that just wouldn't feel quite right in The Blacklist. You know what I mean? If all of a sudden Aram was like, I've got this widget and it's a mapping device, it would feel a little bit alt to me. But this felt like, because it's part of the world, it's part of the Blacklist universe, I could imagine that there's this other team out there that may have that technology. And so those gadgets, that sort of caper aspect, that sort of, you know, the little more fun Mission Impossible sort of vibe is something that I think we feel like we don't have a lot of opportunity to do on The Blacklist. And so this felt like, well, why not? Let's embrace that. Let's do that. And that's where that comes from, you know, and hopefully we'll do more of that on Redemption.
But you guys kept it believable. That was the nice part, because some of these shows, you get too crazy with the technology. Here you have something that's doing internal geo mapping. You have the ocular camera like Google Glass. This is stuff that could realistically be in production today. I think that adds some credibility to it as well.
As I think about it, it's funny. Rick Orsi also, who was also on Alias, is a guy who's just great at that stuff. Rick has a way of talking and thinking that is very natural to him. He has great movie references. He's a sci-fi fan. And those guys are just very good at that. And so the ocular camera, that's like a great gag. You know, that's a great idea. Yeah, easy to embrace other people's ideas when they're fun like that.
I got to ask you, in terms of casting, you already talked about Ryan and Eddie and Famke to a lesser degree, but you've also got one of my all-time favorites, and it's not Lost, it's not Alias. I mean, my love for him goes way back to Stepfather. I legitimately love Terry O'Quinn. And right. I mean, I saw Stepfather in the theater. Please tell him. That's how devoted I am. How did you end up both getting Terry O'Quinn and casting him? What was the decision? Was it just because of the Alias connection, or was it because he's the right guy?
Honestly, that is just dumb, dumb luck. I mean, I couldn't believe that. You know, Terry, I'm a huge fan as well. He is a guy who has a presence, has gravitas. I think I heard you talking about it, Aaron, on one of the podcasts. He's Spader-like in that way, you know. Mm-hmm. He has a real, he eats the screen, and he's somebody to me, when I'm a huge fan of thrillers, 70s thrillers, 3 Days of the Condor, The Parallax View, Clute, all those kinds of things, he feels like, for whatever reason, he fits into that landscape. He's sort of a, I don't know if he's a Gene Hackman kind of guy or what it is, but he just has a great presence. And we were looking for somebody to come in and do the role and to play Tom's father and to play the opposite, you know, to play Scotty's. And we went out to him and he said, yes, we were super lucky. He was our first choice. You know, he was, we were lucky that he was available and wanted to do it.
Great. I like seeing him play a little bit against type, because he is a total manic foil hat wearing loon for part of it. And I've never seen him do that to that degree. And it's great to see him play something a little different.
Yeah. Well, he had to be the guy. He had to be the guy you could believe could be the tinfoil hat guy, but also the guy who you could believe ran a multi-billion dollar international private military corporation. So he couldn't be too nuts. He had to be, you know, when we were originally conceptualizing the character, we talked about, remember Michael Clayton? The Tom Wilkinson's role in that was sort of like, oh my God, you know, he's a brilliant man, but he's cracked. Something has gone wrong. And that we thought could be a character who was both a little bit nutty and also totally right. And I think Terry does a great job of that.
And it adds a little bit of that questioning for the audience too now, because now he has this quote unquote beautiful mind kind of concept where he ran this company. Mm-hmm. So is he telling the truth? Is Scotty telling the truth? Which one of them is the one that Tom needs to believe?
You're a step ahead already. I love that. Yeah, that is true. I mean, you know, how much of what he's saying do we believe? And yet he's got, there's an element that, you know, perhaps he's a little bit of an unreliable narrator only because he's a little nutty. But I think that's part of the fun of it. That's part of the fun of the show.
Well, I think that's a good transition to switch the tone to the actual Blacklist.
I love it.
We were out there in August promoting season 4 with you guys there in the room. Great time hanging out there.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to be clear. There's no we here. All right. I was
there wasn't a we. Yeah.
There's a Troy.
Aaron's taking the whole show in Chicago for C2E2, by the way.
Yeah.
You're talking about when you came out for the DVD behind.
Yeah, special, behind the Blacklist.
Stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Special. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are always a little terrifying because it's like they do them at 8 o'clock in the morning. John and I walk in and we have not probably slept at all. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, what are we doing? This is going to exist on the DVD. And my head's like in episode 12 and thinking about Natalie Luca. Wait a minute. We're talking about what? It's such a weird shift to do those. But I love that Sony had you come out and do that. I thought that was super cool. Again, like a real testament to what the podcast has become and what you guys have done. I thought that was great.
Yeah, it was an absolute blast. I appreciate the invite because I know you guys put in a good word for us too. So that was fantastic with Jim and those guys over at Sony.
Come back. The show's great, you guys. I was listening the other day. In fact, I'm midway through the most recent one, you know, that you guys did on both shows. It's so interesting to hear. I don't know if you've gone back. I haven't. But back to the very early episodes even that you did of the podcast. You guys have got such a great rapport and it moves and it flows and it's super articulate and it's very good. I've become like a listener, you know, trying to stay distanced, but it's always very interesting to listen to. So
how does that feel for you? Someone like you're the creator, you're the artist, to hear other people talking, because I'm sure there's some things where you hear either I or Troy or you hear message boards, that sort of thing, where they critique things. And you're like, no, you guys either aren't getting it or it's just not in your mind because it's your baby. How do you take that, I guess?
Well, I think they're all sort of fair criticisms, right? I mean, everyone's just watching the show, and I think it's interesting. It's always fascinating to me to hear you guys talk about the show because you have a perspective from it that while one, you're very intelligent about it and have kept up with it and know the ins and outs of it in ways that are fascinating to me, but at the same time, you're not in it, living it every day. And so you have some perspective, you know, and stuff that I think might have worked that didn't land is kind of like, you know, that didn't really work like we wanted, or other stuff that did. If I took it personally, I would have even more gray hair than I do. You know, I mean, just like kind of working through it and getting notes from the studio and production and the network and other writers. And, you know, it becomes very, I think you have to be a little thick skinned. So it never bothers me, you know, when I hear criticisms of it or, you know, occasionally you guys will, you know, I remember one of these a while ago. It was like, I kind of felt like a filler episode. And I was like, really? Okay, I get it. I mean, there has been a couple of those where I've gone, was that a filler episode? But I didn't think it was that one. But okay, fine, you know, so now it's fine. That's what it is. That's the show.
Well, that's why you get paid to make it and we just talk about it.
Well, you guys are gentlemen. It really is a blast to listen to.
Which one's been your favorite podcast episode? I'm just curious. If you have like one that stands out in your mind.
Like you've written them down.
The one I listen to every night before I go to bed. No, a favorite one. I don't know that there's a favorite one so much as just a the banter, the sort of sometimes frustrated banter between you two has grown in ways that it wasn't there before that I find sort of delicious. You know what I mean? Like
the, I want to cut him?
Yeah, you can. I love it. That is more the timbre of things that's shifted, and it's just interesting. It's really cool to listen to.
Well, then you must have really enjoyed that fall finale where we were like, mother theory, no mother theory. What the hell's going on?
Oh, yeah, right? I mean, come on. Yeah. But
that might be the dad episode, the theoretically dad
episode.
Yeah,
with dad, right, with Alexander Kirk and the whisper and what did he whisper and all of that. And then also just hearing, you know, fans, you know, write in of what they believe it could have been. And, you know, those are the blanks, the empty space, the air that is left there to sort of fill in, you know, for the viewer. I mean, I know what he said. It's not, I can tell you this, it's not just bullshit. It's not just like, well, let's just have him say something. We don't know what it is. I know what it is, but, that's the fun of it.
Going into season four, we have the whole, you know, who's your daddy? Interesting choice of marketing on the NBC part. As we get this whole Alexander Kirk concept. Now, the big question I had, I think I actually emailed you directly after 402. I believe it was like WTF was the subject line after Kaplan gets shot.
Right.
My question is, what was the conversation struggle that you guys had about the hand grab at the end of the episode? I know Aaron and I debated it. Should the hand grab have been at the start of the next episode? It's better to have it at the end of that episode.
What's the hand grab? Grabbing the grass, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Showing that she was still kind of alive at the end of 402.
Well, we wanted to tell a story where there was more to it than just, here's the thing. Liz faked her death. It felt like it would be a total ripoff to the audience to shoot Kaplan and then come back an episode or two later and go, well, she's not really dead. So that really is what it was. As much as we try desperately to play fair with the audience, and the clues are there and there are pieces there, and there's always within stories and stuff, we're always trying to, like, if you went back and watched it, you could go, oh, well, that's where I should have been able to pick up on that. And that's what that was. And that was something that really Daniel Cerrone was more of an advocate of that than I was. I was like, we need that. But he thought it was really important that we knew there was a chance that she survived that. And it's one of those moments that my favorite moments in TV shows are where, and I'm 95% of the time the dumb one when I'm watching shows with my wife, because I have to, she's like, oh my God, did you? And I'm like, don't tell me. I don't really understand it or figure it out. And she does. And I love the argument afterwards, or the, maybe not argument, but the conversation afterwards where it's like, well, she's still alive. Well, no, she's not. That was her last breath. Twitch, you know, no, she's coming back. No, she's not. That, I think, the things that you can read both ways are the things that are the most enjoyable in the show. So that's what that was about. That was just about playing fair with the audience and signaling that she may come back.
But it also has that water cooler moment, right? So everybody's talking about it of, is she dead? Was it her last grasp? And then I have to wonder how you guys are feeling when NBC comes on and shows the promo and shows she's alive, like not 2 seconds after that touching, like everybody's in tears. They're on the floor crying and throwing stuff at the TV. And then you're like, she's alive. What? And it removes that emotional component. Like how did you guys feel about that? Do you feel promos are a place anymore?
I am so torn about that, Troy. I'm so torn about that. I hate that. I hate that. And I have felt very burned at times in the past. You know, we had moments where Tom, I can't remember exactly how it had worked out. Liz was keeping Tom captive in the hull of a ship, and we didn't know it. And, you know, when a promo says, next week, the reveal that you will never expect about Tom, and that's the last 20 seconds of next week's episode, there's a weird thing where by the end of that episode, the audience is going to be like, well, what a ripoff. I knew this when I came into it. So it's incredibly frustrating. At the same time, that's the business, and that's kind of, I have to, one, they're going to do whatever they want to do in terms of promos. They don't ask or really care, probably rightly so, what I think. But they're trying to sell the show, and they want people to come back. And, you know, and that's part of the bargain, I guess. You know, it's very difficult at times. I think the NBC does a great job with the promos. I think most of the time, I love, that's one of the things I love watching. In the same way that I like hearing your response to the show, I like hearing next week. And it's like, oh, here's the tease. What, how are they going to position this? Some weeks I'm like, why didn't they even talk about the Blacklister? Or wait a minute, they talked about the Blacklister, but they didn't tease at all this other thing. It's always interesting kind of what they choose, but they obviously, it's a team of people who have done it far longer and with much greater success than I have. So I sort of leave that to them.
You know? That is true. You know what? I will say a lot of people tuned in after, I mean, Troy and I were not happy about that promo, but there were a lot of people that tuned in because of it though. So, I mean, there is a method to the madness, mm-hmm. I would say.
There is. Yeah, it is. There is a business aspect to it that I guess I have to sort of embrace.
Yeah, and let's move on to Daddy. Let's move on to the Daddy moment where I'm sure you're probably going to masterfully evade this question. But in
I
terms,
will. I already have.
Yep, I'm sure you're already down the hall. You're like, I already left this conversation.
Right.
In terms of when Red is drugged and admits and gives a little whisper and says Rosebud or whatever into Kirk's ear, if in that same scene admits to being Liz's dad, or her dad, I'm sorry, admits to being her dad.
No, admits to her being the daughter. Get it right.
Her being the daughter. I'm sorry.
Only judge what's on the screen.
Right.
In your mind as the showrunner, does that answer at least that question that she is that person's daughter?
Let me try to masterfully evade that.
Please do.
I think that answers in the same way that I was saying, I love it when my wife and I can have two different perspectives on an element of a show or a movie or the way something ends or whatever. That is an example that I think is really fun and maybe is frustrating for people, but tough. I feel like, on one hand, you can believe that, yes, he is admitting that she is his daughter and that would obviously mean that he is her father. You can interpret that he is drugged and within an inch of his life, and so he is telling Alexander Kirk what he wants to hear. You can include Aaron's mother theory because he didn't say father, right? What how does that work? Sure. He didn't
Troy's
say,
theory.
Yes,
Troy's
I'm her
theory.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Aaron.
Yeah. Sorry. Don't you put that on me.
You can embrace Troy's theory, which says, yes, I guess he said daughter, not I'm her father. So right, even in that, and by the way, there's probably more that I'm not thinking of, but right there are three versions of the truth that different audience members can look at in different ways and think about and argue about. And I love that. Those are really hard to come up with, you know? And so there's three, maybe there's more that we're not talking about. And so that's, I don't know. I'm trying to evade the real answer to it, but it is, but there is a firm answer. There is, you know, within each of those are real, you know, ways to look at the show and ways to embrace it. And I think, look, Spader said very early on when we very first met about the show, I went to his house and we talked about it. And he had always felt like, and I agree that you feel like you know exactly who this guy is. The thing that's fun about Raymond Reddington is once you finally get the answer about what you think he is or what he's doing or what he's up to, you realize that you really had no idea. You know, and I think that's what he's always a step ahead, or he's always got another agenda, or, you know, there's a reason he gave you a case was so he could get a key that's in a bottle. And you're going, wait a minute. And I think that's one of the things that's really fun about the show. And I don't know, maybe that becomes incredibly frustrating for people, but it's again, they're not whimsical, and they are very intentional, and there are different ways to look at it, you know, that are thought out, that are given a lot of thought to in the room.
It's a tough thing to haul too, right? Because you have 22 episodes that you have to cover, these signposts along the way.
Yeah.
And especially when you got the spinoff looming and you have to figure some stuff out with that too, just makes it extra complicated because you almost wish that at the end of every episode, you are getting a nugget or a morsel or a grain of sand that goes to the mythology. But sometimes you just can't do that in every episode because if you do that too fast, then there's no show left. But,
right.
But at the same time, you have to time it at the exact right moments. I mean, we have obviously the back six or seven that are coming up, and just knowing where that's going to be heading, you know, looking at some of the casting. I mean, you had some really fantastic stuff coming up for the end of the season.
We have some great cats. We do. And, you know, it's funny. I'm curious what you guys think about it. I'm curious what the audience thinks. It's a very delicate balance. And it's very difficult to not be seduced by the idea of chewing through the mythology. So, in other words, if we do an episode where it's just a case of the week, where we get a bad guy and Red, as a result of that, expands his empire because he takes over, this guy. We took somebody out and Red absorbs that guy's empire. Typically, if we do that, I feel like people are like, well, we didn't learn anything about them. We didn't learn anything new about Red and Liz. We don't know anything more than we did before. On the other hand, if we tell a story where it's mythology heavy, you know, it feels like, why are we getting the case of the week? Why aren't we getting like just a good, simple story about a good blacklister? You know, but there's a very odd sort of, it's a hard balance to strike, you know? And I think that, you know, what we've found, and I'm curious what you guys think about that. What we found is that the beginning of the season, the fall finale, and the end of the season tend to become more serialized. And, you know, there are parts of the season, I don't know, a couple episodes in up to episode 8 that feel a little more standalone. And then again, when you come back, once we resolve that sort of fall finale story, 9 or 10 or 11, they start feeling a little more standalone. And that's one of the reasons why we resolved the Kirk story, not as a cliffhanger this year. We wanted Kirk to walk off and Red to survive and things to reset. So when we came back, it wasn't like, we're still holding on to the same sort of mythological questions about the deeper mythology of the show. It was just like, guess what? We're back. And in fact, Liz gets her badge back and she's now a cop. Back to the meat and potatoes of a case of the week show. But again, that, you know, it's a delicate balance and it's one that's hard to walk and we kind of fluctuate back and forth. And I don't know, hopefully it's satisfying, but it's hard because there's different aspects of it that I like, and I like aspects of the serialized stuff, but I also love a great just case of the week. So, potato, potato a little bit.
I love the mix.
The mix is great.
Yeah.
I think the challenge, I think most of the audience is feeling though, is you have these shows, Westworld, right? I don't think you've seen it yet, but
I haven't seen it yet. Yeah.
Westworld is like one of those things where it's like you get these 10 solid concrete episodes and it's like boom, 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 boom. And now the audience has this expectation. Like, hey, why can't you be like Westworld? Why can't you be like Game of Thrones? Why can't you be like Walking Dead and just answer all of these questions? At the same time, you look at like Veronica Mars, I know is a big one for Aaron and I, and you had this whole A story over the entire season that had these kind of B signposts along the way where the C story answered the B story that answered the A story. I think that's kind of where the audience, I think now is 4 seasons in, give us one answer, but have that answer set up 2 more years of stories.
Well, that's interesting. I think on one hand, doing 10 episodes sounds like a vacation, you know, because
yeah,
doing, and that's not no dig on those shows, but you know, doing 10 or 12 episodes or 13 over the course of a year is a lot different than doing 22 or 23. And really this year with The Blacklist and with Redemption, we're doing 30 episodes. So it's not a disadvantage. It's just a different dynamic that we have where we're telling a show. I feel like what we're attempting to do in my mind is a cable show on network television. We're trying to do something that's hyper serialized and yet has a case of the week aspect to it. And that can kind of fluctuate back and forth, but it's interesting. You know, some of those shows that, like you say, Game of Thrones, Westworld, are those just straight, there's no case of the week to that, right? They're just a serialized story, right?
Yeah. It's a 10 hour movie.
Yeah. Right. A 10 hour movie. And same thing. I haven't seen Walking Dead, which is like huge numbers and has been on a lot. Again, there's no case there, right? It's a soap opera, right?
Yeah, for the most part.
There's a case of nothing happening. There's a lot of that. So a lot of walking.
Well, it's incredibly successful. And we're a very weird hybrid, you know, but I don't know if I'm answering anything, but it is a difficult thing to balance and something that we try to give. And by the way, look, here's the thing I will say. If people feel like they're not getting answers, when the show is over, whether that's a year or 10 years, which God forbid, and I'm sure it wouldn't be that, but no matter how long it is, I think you could go back and look at the show again, and you would realize how big of answers you were giving each season. Because you don't know the ultimate answer right now, but it is there are big truths that are being woven in that in the end, it's not a traditional way to do TV. You're not supposed to have, you're not supposed to know where you're going. You're not supposed to end it. You know, mm-hmm. like, I remember pitching a TV show to an agent once, the first time I ever talked to an agent about a TV show. And I said, here's the end. It's going to be so cool. And it's going to be great. And I got this big hook. And the guy's like, yeah, look, don't ever pitch an ending in TV. I was like, oh, he's like, TV doesn't end. It just goes on and on. And I'm like, oh, okay. I don't know how to do that. But it just, you know, they want it to go on forever and make as many episodes as possible. And I can't imagine sort of not at least knowing where you're going. I don't know how you could truthfully tell a story without really knowing kind of what your destination is.
Point, because you have things like Lost, for example, where they had the writer's strike. Yeah. They came back and they said, look, if we're going to end this, we got 30 episodes or 20 episodes that we can do to get this to the ending that we want. You're going approaching season 5 at this point.
Right.
There's got to be a time where you say, you know what, hey, the runway is only 30 episodes to go. Do we think about wrapping the sucker up by season 6, season 7, whatever it ends up being? So let the fans, because now the fans have an expectation with these mythology shows. Right. Like, they're going to get an answer, and is that answer satisfying enough to close it up? So how does that conversation work with you guys and NBC and Sony?
Well, again, I have nothing to say about that. Yes, there's an answer that will be satisfying or not satisfying. It's satisfying to me. So that is that I know. As far as how long the show's on, it's funny, you know, it's not just about the numbers. It's about other shows. It's about what their lineup is. It's about the how much each, you know, network owns of each show. It's such a weird algorithm, you know, that as much as I wish it had to do just with the quality of the show or the numbers, even it really doesn't. So I don't know. I mean, in terms of how long we have, I'm not sure, you know. I mean, I'm always surprised that, look, just truthfully as a writer, I'm always like, oh my God, are we going to have another idea? Are we going to have another season? What are we going to do at the end of the season? What's going to bring us back? You know, you always sort of feel like that in the back of your mind, but I feel more confident than ever that we have a really good engine and a really good story and a direction. So I'm not worried about it. We'll make it as long as the fans dig it and as long as the studio and the network want to pay to make the episodes. But I'm not worried at all about running out of material.
That brings us to a question, and we're not going to put you on the spot like last year. I don't want to do that again. But listeners want to know, when can they expect news on an announcement? That's the thing you probably get asked the most. Is there going to be a season 5?
I said there was a season 4 last year before I was supposed to say that, right? Is that what happened?
Yeah, yep.
That is correct, yeah.
Good news for you guys. Yeah, I you know what? I don't know yet. I don't. If I were going to be evasive about a question, that's the one I should not answer. I don't know. You know, I don't know when they, even when, I'm blown away by, like, when they picked us up originally. You don't know until the upfronts are like May 12th or 13th. You don't know until May 9th. You know, May 8th, originally when we were picked up. So they can play it right down to the wire. But all I can tell you is how I feel about it. I feel really good about the stories we're telling. I feel really good about the direction of the show. I know the runway that we have. And you know, if they don't want to do it, that's their prerogative. But I feel very bullish about the show. And truthfully, guys, like, writing the spinoff has shown me, I talked to James about this, like, writing the spinoff, As exciting as that is and trying to start something new, it also shows me how much I enjoy doing a show that I know how to write. I didn't really know that, oh, I know how to write for Spader. I know what an episode, what some of the expectations are, what the set pieces are. In doing a new show, you go, okay, well, what do we want this to look like? What do we want this to feel like? What are the character dynamics? I know those characters now. I know who Wrestler is and some of the, you know, stories that we have or haven't told. You know, and who Liz is and how those things work. And that's kind of cool. It's very comforting in a way. So I feel good about it.
Are you excited that your baby's grown? I guess that's the big question, right? You got the comic books, you got the Beekeeper was out. You have another book from Titan is coming out.
Right.
And now you have Redemption. So, I mean, do you guys have a giant Bible book? I mean, I know you guys say you kind of written to it as you've gone along, but is there something that this universe could expand long after the Blacklist ends?
I don't know. I mean, it is very weird looking at the merchant, like, I'm looking at some Funko Pop. It's so weird to me that there's those that we have. I'm like, wow, there's a doll of James Spader and Megan Boone. It's very weird to me. Or I've got on my desk the comic book that Nicole Phillips wrote. And, you know, in the back, it lists all the blacklisters who are, you know, deceased or active or alive or out there. And it is very weird to sort of, you know, that sort of merchandise books and that sort of stuff. It's very strange. It's super cool. It's really neat to see.
That's good to know. I'm pretty excited. The last big blacklist one, and then we're going to talk some fan. We're going to mention some fan stuff. But
sure.
Dembe, I mean, that threw a lot of people off for a loop. What's Dembe. Up with that?
My God, not Dembe. It couldn't be. That's my Spader impression.
Yeah, that was spot on. Yeah.
Thank you.
Almost as if you wrote it.
You want to preface it with what?
I want to preface it with, we don't know for sure that Dembe actually poisoned him. I don't think it was 100%, but it looks that way.
We don't? To me.
I mean, I didn't feel like it was concrete. I felt like it was alluded to very directly. But with the show, I'm not taking anything as science until I hear Dembe say, man, I poisoned Red. Can you believe it?
Right. Well, look, I hope that was a surprise. I hope it's a turn. We've got a great episode that involves Dembe and bees.
Bees.
Hate them. Look, Hisham's great. He's a man of few words, Dembe is. And what bigger betrayal than somebody who is at Red's side? Look, it is an engine for a big story. I guarantee you that next episode, and when we come back, it's a two-parter. And this is another one of those things I'm curious how NBC promos it, because there's big turns and big twists and stuff that I hope they don't reveal. But I do think that this two-parter, when we come back April 20th, is a really good two-parter. I'm so excited about it. It's Hisham-centric and in a great way. And it also, we have a story that's almost in its sort of construction. That is outside the box, that is not a case of the week, that is very unusual and it dives deep into the mythology. So I think when we come back, there's a really fun engine to the back half of the season.
I've seen the casting list. Aaron has not. So I've been biting my tongue.
I love how Aaron ignores and hides from all the promos right. And all that stuff. That's great.
I try. I'm tired of being spoiled by everything, and I want to live it.
Right.
I just want to live it.
You know, it's sort of like there used to be a movie theater here in LA called the Lemley Sunset Five, and I remember you could go there and watch a movie, and there, you know, it's like all these weird indie movies, and there's sort of going and watching a movie there was like, you don't know what to expect. You hadn't seen the trailer 18 times. You don't know what the promos are. You don't know who's in it. You buy a ticket for some weird movie, and it's like, whoa. You know, and it is a little bit of a different way to watch something. So I admire that.
It's hard. Believe me. In this day and age, it is very
right.
difficult.
It is.
Yeah.
We'll do fan ones really quick here. First and foremost, super, super kudos to you guys for pulling off the Lulu McClellan tribute. That was 100% fantastic. Round of applause for you guys.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I got a little dewy eyed. I was driving in. I don't know if it was this morning or yesterday. Listening, I was actually listening to your podcast about it, talking about it, and giving us a shout out for that. That was very sweet. I sort of took a little step back from Twitter and Facebook and all those things after the election, and also just being busy. But I did peek and I heard about Lulu and. It was like, okay, we got to do something. And I'm glad it was well received.
Oh, very much so. People are still talking about it. That was a beautiful moment.
That's
Thanks
great.
For that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I made a comment on the last podcast because this name keeps coming up. And I, being astute as we are, have kind of glossed over this character because I just thought it was a throwaway. But Jennifer, the daughter of Naomi Reddington from season 2, that one just seems to keep coming up over and over and over and over again. What are we going to hear about Jennifer? When's Jennifer going to come up?
Where? Like within the show or within people talking about the show?
Yeah, fan community. There's even one theory now that's going around that because everybody has like two names, right? It's Tom Keene, Jacob Phelps, Christopher Hargrave, or Masha, Elizabeth, blah, blah, blah. You know, now they're like,
That's interesting.
Yeah, Elise Janet is Elise Janet Jennifer, and Elise was the one that poisoned him or something. And she's going to come back into the fold. And it's like, wow, where are people getting this stuff, and how are they coming up with this?
Yeah.
But is this Jennifer character somebody that we should be paying attention to?
Well, look, Jennifer is a real character within the universe. It is not. Yeah, I mean, she was referenced in season two, and you know, Naomi Highland, and it is a character who is out there that we have not gone back to. One of the things that is difficult within the show is to tell an episode that it doesn't feel like it's going backwards. You know, it sometimes it feels like we go tell a story and we're like, oh, this will be great. We'll talk about this. And unless it's the people who are really avid viewers of the show, somebody else watching might be like, what are they talking about? Jennifer, who's Jennifer? What is that? You know, but the truth is, yes, Jennifer is a character who's in the landscape of the show. And Elise, Jennifer is Elise, but you have not seen the last of Elise / Janet, who also does have two names, as you pointed out. And I think she's great. And so we will see her when we come back, actually, in episode 16. But but yeah, Jennifer's out there. Jennifer, to be discovered one day.
For our benefit, can we just call her Janet going forward?
Janet? I think I can't figure out what to call her. Yes, we should call her Janet, probably, yes. She doesn't seem like a Janet to me, but yeah.
Well, Rom could just go.
Damn it, Janet.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Rom could just go around. Damn it, Janet.
Damn it, Janet. Yeah. Damn it, Janet. Yeah.
Next one, after 408, Red is the only one that Liz can get answers from about her past. Why have Liz and Red been so distant since then? When will the leads interact more with each other again, like season one?
It is a difficult balance because Megan's character is sort of tasked with being the skeptic and is often come to see that she loves him and cares for him. But I do think we lean into that more in the back part of the season. I think also, you know, look, Megan, who, like I said, nobody works harder than Megan. She has a lot on her shoulders. It is true that she had a baby and we were aware of that. And maybe it's felt in the writing a little bit, but that, you know, we tried to be aware of that and give her a little space. She's still at the center of the show, but she's also a mom in real life. And her not being in every single scene with James also allowed us, I think, in a healthy way to get to know a lot of the other characters like and Wrestler and Samar and Cooper. We have told a lot of stories that we weren't able to tell in the first season by getting to know some of these other characters, which I think is healthy for the show and those sort of characters who are involved. But we will see more Liz and Red together.
This one was interesting. If you could do anything different, no strings attached, if you could do anything different with the show/story, what would it be right now? Like if you could do anything you wanted.
It would probably all take place in space.
Nice.
What would I do?
If you add robots, we're best friends. I'm telling you now, Aaron will hate you.
right. Westworld crossover. No. What would I do differently? I don't know. There's so many ways to look at that. Like production wise or story wise. I really don't know. It's sort of like, that's like sort of like saying, what would you do differently in raising your kid? You know, I don't know. I really am proud of the show and I don't know that I'd do much different.
Fair answer. And then of course, everybody knows you've been probably super stressed out with doing 30 episodes this season. So if you could do anything different with your life, what would you do differently if you weren't going to be a TV writer?
Well, I would just I would probably just sleep a little bit more and hang out with my family a little bit more. But look, the truth is I have been employed and I've been unemployed, and I know how lucky I am to be working and writing for the actors that I'm writing for and making the show with the team in New York. So it's kind of hard, as difficult as it is, it's a little hard to bitch about it, you know? It's a little hard to be like, wow, I wish I had more time off, you know? Because I've had time off before, and all I wanted to do was be working. So short hair kids want long hair, and long hair kids want short hair, and curly hair kids want straight hair. And you want, the grass is always greener, you know. And I'm old enough to now know that how super lucky I am to be writing a show, even though it's super f-ing hard. It really is.
I got a personal plug slash question, I guess, but we do a podcast called Remake This Movie Right, and we're always where you take movies that have already existed and we kind of reshape them, and how would you remake them, because that's the trend these days. And I was kind of curious from you in terms of you wrote Taking Lives, which came out, you know, several years ago. Fun movie. DJ Caruso did it. He also did Disturbia and the XXX3, which I don't care what the critics said. I had a blast with that movie. But
I love DJ, but I took my son, who I think might have been too young. We had to leave. I was like, oh my.
There's a walk out. Yeah, there's a whole lot of sexy time.
There kind of is. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, so if you could remake your own movie, if you could remake Taking Lives, because we've actually talked about, since we do The Blacklist and, you know, your name comes up all the time, we've actually talked about doing an episode on that movie, just because it's an homage to Mr. Bokenkamp. But how would you do it? How would you remake your own movie? Would you update it? Would you do anything a little different that you wish you could have done different at the time, kind of thing?
That's really interesting. I mean, God, the remake Taking Lives. I don't know. That was so, that was a weird experience, because that was the first movie I wrote. And it was like, you know, you work on it for 5 years or whatever it is, and then it goes off and gets made, and other people work on it, and, you know, very talented people, but including rewriting it. So it's sort of your own, but not really. Differently there. God. You know what it probably could use in a weird way now, after working on The Blacklist? The thing I'm more comfortable with now is humor. It could probably use a laugh or two, really. It could probably have a little more self-awareness. It was very serious. I don't know. The fake pregnant belly? I don't know. That was a Tony Scott. That was a Tony Scott idea.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. He was going to direct a movie, and we had met a number of times. Actually, here's a Blacklist tie-in for you. We hired a gentleman to be our FBI consultant, to learn how a profiler, which is why Elizabeth Keene is a profiler, because I learned a lot about profiling in that world through Taking Lives, because I was sort of fascinated by it. And we hired this guy to be our advisor, who was a profiler from the FBI, who founded the profiling department, and his name was Robert Ressler, who is why Donald Ressler is Donald Ressler, named after a guy who I got to know working with Tony. And we would go in and work on the movie and try to figure out a script. And that was something that came about, the fake belly and the stab and the whole thing, and this sort of jump in time in the story. And he was great. And it, whatever, for whatever reason, didn't work. And he went off and did other stuff, obviously. And we would have been lucky to have him. But he at one time was going to direct the movie. And I remember conversations where that came about with him. I don't know. How would I remake that movie? I don't know. It's hard. That's hard. What is the one that you guys would remake?
Well, we've done a bunch of them.
But what is your number one? If you were going to do it, what is your, well, here's the one to remake. I know you're all Big Trouble in Little China, which I don't think I've ever seen.
It's a movie I don't really want remade. I don't think you could recapture that one at all, honestly. Probably. You know what? I think we just did It. We did an It episode, and Troy had a really, really dark and twisted take on it, which I thought would be fantastic.
Actually. Oh, Stand By Me.
Stand By Me. I said It. I'm sorry. Nice. Stand By Me, which is a movie I walked into going, don't touch it. Just never touch it. And Troy had a really cool, sadistic idea, and I got really behind it. Like, basically he turned it into where they grow up and you find out that one of them was a murderer. It's a hard thing to explain, but it really worked in the crux of the story. Yeah.
I blame all my Blacklist watching for that one. I've become sick and twisted.
Fascinating idea. I wish I had a better answer for you about how to remake Taking Lives, but
I was just kind of curious.
What a perfect movie. I say sarcastically.
I like
sure it. What you would do there, but
You had Jack Bauer, man. You can't go wrong. You had Jack Bauer. You had Ethan Hawke, Angelina. You're fine. That was a good guest.
That's right. We did have Jack Bauer. Yeah, that's right.
Well, I think you should sit on it, and then when you get some time off here over the summer, you get to come on and do that episode with us.
When you get time off.
That's what the world is waiting for, is the remake of Taking Lives. Yeah, no, I'm sure there's another movie to remake that would be even better.
Do you look at getting back into the, once, whenever this ride is over, and it's been a great ride, and you're still doing great work on it, there's no reason to, I'm not saying anytime soon, but down the road, mm-hmm. Do you want to get back into movies, do you think? Or are you more comfortable on TV now that you've really got a handle on it?
I think about it all the time. I really do. I love movies. I go to every movie I can go to. I go to bad movies that I know are going to be bad because I know they were made for one. You know, there's some good idea in even those bad movies. And I love them. And so, yes, I would love to do both. I also... that a writer has in TV. I think that's the way it should be. Writers get shit on in features in a way that is just gross. And the development process is not healthy. So I like the control that I have. I'm a little bit of a control freak, and I like watching every single cut, finding all the music and collaborating with all the people who are involved, which my experience in features is very different because I was the guy that they're like, okay, great. Thank you for the draft. Now we're going to bring somebody else in. And I didn't really have much say. So I like the dynamic of TV, but I grew up watching movies and I love movies. And yeah, I got a couple of good ones in me that when I find the time, I look forward to writing and making and having nobody see. I'm sure they'll be amazing.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm pretty excited. Yeah.
I think we're probably way over time here, so I just want to say April 20th, Blacklist Returns, Blacklist Redemption currently airing, so make sure you check that out Thursday nights, 10 Eastern Pacific, 9 Central on NBC. John, we are so looking forward to chatting with you April 22nd in Chicago at the Comic-Con thing, so we're really excited to put something on and have a really good time for that hour. That'd be fantastic.
I have no idea what to expect. Thrilled to get out of my office and go to Chicago, and it's an excuse for my wife and I to come to Chicago, which I love, and I think it's going to be a blast. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thank Absolutely. You for inviting me. So we'll see. Hopefully I can have something insightful to say, but yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, we'll have a good time. We know there's fans that are coming from, I heard somebody the other day said they were driving 12 plus hours to come to the event. So
no kidding. How cool. Yeah, it'll be fun. That'll be great.
In closing, if you could tease anything you want to the audience to what to expect in Redemption, you already talked about the Blacklist opener. Is there anything about how the season unfolds or how Redemption is going to unfold? Anything you want to say, like in closing, to say, hey, guys, get excited because there's some whatever going to happen.
Well, I think, look, with Redemption, like Blacklist, it was a show that it takes a little bit to find our footing. But we know where we know where we're going in that show, and I would look at that like it's a little mini series. You know, it's an eight episode arc. It's got a great hook at it. We're writing the last episode right now, which is super fun, and it's just a wild ride. You know, it's a wild ride that's just a little more fun, a little more sexy, a little more not quite as dark, but it is worth a peek, and yet. You got it. The 20th of April is going to be a blast on the Blacklist. I'm really excited to talk to you guys about it.
Oh, I'm excited.
It is going to be fun.
Yeah, I saw a fan art. I don't remember where I saw it, where it had a fedora and a joint. So that's cool with 420 and whatnot.
That sounds like a Saturday night. Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. I'll share that with Spader. I'm sure he'll respect that. Guys, thank you for doing this and having me back.
Thanks for coming
again. It's really fun to listen to you guys deconstruct the show and have fisticuffs over it.
Okay, that was our interview with Mr. John Bokenkamp. What do you think, Troy? Are you excited about Redemption? Are you looking forward to seeing where this show goes?
I am super excited. We've said this numerous times. Tom Bond. Tom and Eddie, or Tom and Solomon together. I keep saying Tom and Eddie, but Tom and Solomon together, Ryan and Eddie together. I think that comedic duo is just going to be fantastic. I'm really excited to find out. We recorded this before episode 2 aired, so I'm really excited to see what episode 2 brings, as John mentioned, to kind of give it that little extra oomph coming off that first episode. They're just finishing up number 8 right now, so I think it's going to be a really great little mini run here for Redemption, but really, really super, super stoked for that April 20th return.
Yeah, and I really kind of wish I would have asked the fugitive question. That's the one thing I wanted to ask, and I forgot. Was Eddie actually channeling the fugitive, or was it just a coincidence when he goes, "I don't care"? I don't know, but it felt like it. It felt like it was an homage, and I meant to ask, and I didn't. So shame on me. It was a great interview, man. I think we got a lot of great nuggets and tidbits, and you know, it's always hard when you have to dance around some topics. You know, the red question. Everybody wanted us to ask it, so we did ask it, you know, as well as we could, as well as about, you know, season 5. And there are some things where he just can't go into it yet. And the big question he's never going to answer, but people always want us to ask, so we do.
But we did get insights into Jennifer. So he does remember who Jennifer is. It's not like Jennifer fell off the face of the map. So all the Jennifer fans out there are like, yay, we got a Jennifer nugget.
Are there a lot of Jennifer fans? I haven't really thought about her, except you keep mentioning
it. Well, I keep mentioning it because I've seen it more and more over the last couple of weeks in the Facebook and the Twitter and on Tumblr. A lot of people keep coming back to Jennifer. So maybe it's the same person posting under different aliases. I don't know. But it's been out there quite a bit lately. So I'm interested to see where it goes. But super excited that he said Elisa's going to be back. That's awesome, man. He's great.
No, he said Janet is coming back.
Janet's coming back. That's right. We told him. It was like, call her Janet.
Let's clarify.
Make it easy on us.
I don't care what you call her. I just bring her back. I think she's great. She's a fun addition, and love to see her and Ram go back and forth. So I'm looking forward to that. Anything else you want to talk about, man? I mean, what do you want to go over? What do you want to mention? Do you want to mention the Chicago thing again?
Yeah, we should mention it again. April 22nd, room S402. That's Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, otherwise known as C2E2.com. The tickets, again, are $70 for the weekend or $40 just for Saturday. We know there's a bunch of you coming, so if you are coming, make sure you hit us up in the Facebook group, on Twitter, shoot us an email. Again, that's feedback@goldenspiralmedia.com. Just let us know you're coming. We definitely want to get a tally of all of the podcast listeners that are going to be in attendance, because we have some really cool things that are going to involve you guys. So if you're there, we want to make sure we know you're there so that we can incorporate you into the hour, because I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Man, I don't even know what you're talking about, but it sounds exciting.
It is.
Just kidding. Just kidding. No, it'll be a lot of fun. So please let us know. And plus, we do want to do a listener meetup at some point on that day. So if you guys want to do that, so please reach out to us and let us know you're coming so we can work that out. That'd be great. And John will be there so you can ask him all the questions that you think we didn't ask. Or you're like, well, you guys should have asked was this, because somebody always says that. You know what you guys should have done was that, you know what? Show up and you can ask him, and then he can masterfully evade you.
You know what? I didn't ask this one question because I probably already knew the answer. But Red,
is it the mommy thing? Because
no,
I don't care.
No, Red actually does have one of those self-cleaning litter boxes because he has $2 billion in the bank. So he could afford one of those things.
Do we know his dollar amount?
We knew he had a lot because he had multiple banks.
I know he had $200 million at one point, but I don't remember hearing him. You can ask him that. How much money does Red Reddington actually have on hand?
Can I have a loan to get home? The plane tickets are expensive.
Yeah, they're pricey. All right. Well, that'll conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @TheBlacklistGSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed. And we use the show's hashtag, TheBlacklist. As we did allude to in the previous episode, we'll now be covering the Redemption every single week. What we're going to do is we're going to do an episode that covers the entire show on April 15th that we'll release. But we also have another special bonus episode, I believe, coming in the near future. So make sure you subscribe if you have not.
Absolutely. Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join the Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed, where you can get all the information about that next special episode, as well as continued information and updates about what's coming up at April 22nd at C2E2. So again, Tumblr, Instagram, Facebook, The Blacklist Exposed. Just do that search and you'll find us out there.
Yeah. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play. Listen from the website. If you're really on the go, though, make sure you download our app for iOS and Android powered by Spreaker. You'll also find all the intel and analysis about this episode by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Want to remind you again, I know it's like the third or fourth time, but April 22nd at C2E2 in Chicago. Be there with me. It's going to be exciting. Troy will probably be there too, but we don't have to talk to Troy. We don't. We just don't.
Nope, because Aaron said he's running the show because I did the thing in August. So I'm just going to sit in the fans with you guys. I'm just going to watch.
How many times did you need to drop that one? You're like, you know, remember when I hung out in your office? Remember when I came out there? It's like you're just rubbing my nose in it is what you're doing.
There you go.
You guys feel that? That's what I heard. It was like rubbing. Yeah. Yeah. It's like taking your poodle and saying, stop peeing in the corner. That's what it felt like.
Put your face in it afterwards. Oh, that's right. I'll be there too. And again, special fan roundtable is coming up in a couple weeks. So make sure, again, you subscribe to the podcast. Don't just listen to it on the website. Make sure you subscribe to get every single episode that comes out so you don't miss a single one. Until then, it's going to be great. April 20th, the show returns. April 22nd, C2E2. It'll be a gas. Till then, we're signing off. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.